Shalom, Saints. Welcome back to the Upper Room After Hours. Wow, it's almost a bit strange being back in the studio. It's been a while. First ride out post-Sukkot. Thank you for those that have tuned in over the last couple of episodes for our recording from Sukkot. It was a real real privilege to get to record those episodes. And I just want to thank those that took part. And it was really interesting because those that did take part, I didn't approach anyone individually. I really felt like the process was spirit-led in the sense that those that were volunteering themselves to do it did of their own volition. And I really enjoyed not only recording with them, but the conversations that we had. I really feel and I hope that they were a blessing to those that listened to them, really edifying, really encouraging, and just a great example of a little insight into what takes place at Sukkot, and essentially an encouragement going into the next season, which in the context of what we're going to look at today is appropriate, because we're getting back to the grind in terms of exposing the darkness that takes place in the world, putting a biblical lens on some areas and topics that may be hard to navigate, controversial from a secular point of view. But I think it's important in these times that we do hold a biblical standard to many of life's conundrums that seem to be not only be taking place, but are really amplified in a way that modern living hasn't seen before. So without further ado, enough of the gassing. Let's take a look at today's subject. Now, I'm going to have to be careful in terms of the language and terminology I use for flagging and algorithms and all that kind of fare. But today we're going to be looking at a subject that's come my way over the last couple of days. It's not a new subject. There's nothing new under the sun. However, it just has a new modern incarnation, which we're going to look at. So this article wasn't necessarily the article that sparked my reason for looking at this today. That's a different video that we're going to take a look at a bit later on. But I just wanted to throw a bit of context and framework to the discussion. So this is the assisted unaliving euthanasia debate, which has taken a more modern, sleek, stylish, and palatable form. So several arrested after woman dies in the unaliving pod. Police in Switzerland made multiple arrests after a woman reportedly ended her life using this so-called pod in apparently the first case of its kind. Police in the Schaffhausen region said they arrested several persons on suspicion of inciting and aiding and abetting unaliving after she reportedly used a pod made by the company Sarco on Monday. We're going to take a look at those guys. While assisted dying is legally protected in some circumstances in Switzerland, it's strictly regulated and the Sarco pod has encountered opposition. Now, there are numerous countries where this practice is deemed legal. However, a lot of them are restricted to being citizens of that country in order to take part in it. Switzerland, I believe, is either the only one or one of the minority where you can go from another country to do this legally. Which is, again, this is going to be a principle we're going to look at today in terms of the legality of this process. Officers recovered the device and body at the scene. So It says warning contains distressing content, and again, I'm definitely aware that this is a sensitive subject for those that may well have been affected by this subject. So I'm going to do my best to be as delicate as I can and as sensitive as I can, but at the same time, holding a biblical framework to this. So, the company behind the controversial pod says it can be solely operated by the person seeking to end their own life without medical supervision. Police said it was used on Monday at a forest hut in the Merrihausen area, a sparsely populated part of Switzerland on the German border. Police said they were tipped off by a law firm about a unaliving involving the device. The number of people arrested and their identities were not disclosed. The deceased was also not named. So in the meat of it, it's the principle of somebody taking their own life, having the modality to do so, but obviously having the assistance from others in order to get to that point. So there are some blurred lines in terms of what the assistance actually involves, with ultimately the person pulling the trigger, so to speak, with their own responsibility of the actual action. However, it does take others in order for them to get there. In July, a pro-assisted dying group which promotes the Sarco device said it anticipated it would be used for the first time this year. Advocates say it provides an option not reliant on drugs or doctors, and that it expands access to euthanasia as the portable device can be 3D printed and assembled at home. However, there has been opposition in Switzerland, despite the country having some of the world's most protective laws surrounding assisted dying. Critics fear the device's modern design glamorizes suicide, and the fact that it can be operated without medical oversight is concerning. Assisted dying is illegal in the UK and in most other European countries, but thousands have travelled to Switzerland over the years to end their own lives. So, not a new subject, not a new topic. There's nothing new under the sun. This has been something that's been taking part for since time began, and it is an area in which there can be nuance, in the sense that when you rely on your own understanding, when you rely on the morality of man, as it were, you can kind of get lost in the source in terms of what the principles are at play. So we're going to take a look at how these lines can be blurred and what our responsibility is, essentially, in these times, to call a spade and declare what we think what is wrong and what the world says is right, because we live in a time where you know, evil will be called good and vice versa. So with that being said, let's take a little look into the company itself, Sarco. First impressions of the website is it's in that kind of Apple mold of looking very sleek, very almost glamorous. It just evokes that scripture about how Satan appears as an angel of light. You know, a lot of this is done under the guise of progression, and there's all quite often this connotation of progress being good, like to be progressive, this kind of false sense of taking humanity further along is done under a kind of good intention or morally improved superior position to antiquity, which I believe the universal timeless principles of the rules, as it were, the foundational principles to human life, which obviously biblically centered, that's tried and tested. But we are living in a deceived time where we're progressing to areas like this. So the idea, the concept of a capsule that could produce a rapid decrease in oxygen level while maintaining a low CO2 level, the conditions for a peaceful, even euphoric death, was the brief behind the Sarco. The exit was approached in 2012 for a technological solution for a UK man with locked-in syndrome. It was the Sarco that emerged, no doctor required and yet completely lawful. Now, that case in itself, a gentleman who unfortunately suffered a stroke, was left extremely paralysed, terrible situation, and wanted to take his own life. And they worked with this gentleman to create a device in which he would be able to do it. He didn't get to do that because I believe he was in a court case, which he was denied the legal ability to do so. And I think he essentially starved himself to an unfortunate end. Aside from the personal account, which is these things are terrible situations for people to be in, like, no doubt, but quite often in these kind of life preserving conversations, whether it be through infants and children and babies, or even adults at the end of their time, I find a lot of the advocates will tend to grasp onto the most extreme scenarios and situations in order to create a law or legislation which then becomes the overall guiding rule, when I think a lot of these can be the minority exceptions, you know, the 0.05% of cases which are the exception to the rules, which then people will gravitate towards as an example to use as a reason to change the law or legislation to enable others to do the same thing. But we'll touch a bit more into that as we go. The elegant design was intended to suggest a sense of occasion, of travel to a new destination. Even in the design and the kind of branding of this capsule, there's kind of like this cosmic, you know, you are the universe, new age approach to the ethos behind it. I know within the design itself, they try to evoke a principle of traveling to the new place, the next destination, in a kind of cosmic sci-fi spiritual mishmash, which for those who maybe don't have a grounding in terms of the afterlife and what's to be expected, this could be an attractive proposition. Let's take a look.
A device to provide people with a death when they wish to die, which is peaceful and reliable, but also elegant and stylish.
Elegant and stylish. It just seems like a bit of a perverse throwaway with the narrative. It's detracting from the principle of death itself. It's elegant and stylish. It's almost like how it's coined the Sarco, which is a derivative of the sarcophagus, right? Which goes back to ancient Egypt, with the old pharaohs being buried and mummified in all their riches and splendor. Which, like, it that, at that point, you could have all the gold and all the materials in the world, but it's it's your soul, obviously, that counts, and where your soul's going is the important thing. But we're living in this world where materialism and humanism has combined to this awful combination of, well, you know, if I'm going out, at least I'm going to look good while I do it, which is crazy. It also showed the guy there, I think it's Dr. Philip Nitschke, talking about, very briefly, we're going to have a bit of a look at him. He was the guy that came up with the design. And again, just another one of those progressive deceptors, basically. Let's have a look. So having taken a look at the design, you can get a bit more of a feel for it. It's very appealing in the sense that, like, it's taken you... I think there's a thing in modern life where it takes you away from the reality of the sin itself, where it not so much glamorizes it, but it desensitizes and detaches you from what it is you're actually doing. And this definitely hits that on the head, because it looks very modern and sleek and, as he says, elegant and stylish. And it's like, it's a death pod, you know, like, that's where you're going to die. We'll get into this principle of, like, the control element of having been your decision. Now, I know lots of people in this conversation are going to point to the principle of suffering and, you know, terrible situations that people are in, whether it comes to chronic illnesses, diseases, terminal situations, which are all horrendous places to be in, of course. But like anyone, where does the line of control belong? You know, those that are believers, those that hold the Bible as the standard of morality and righteousness and all things that are good and profitable for us, would advocate that it's in God's hands, it's God's timing, and there are numerous scriptures to back that up. And I think it's good that we remind ourselves of those scriptures and of these principles, why we believe what we believe, which can often go against our own understanding or can confound very delicate and difficult situations that involve human suffering. But again, suffering, revealing the hearts and the destinies of those on the earth, as much as it's hard to say, is still a big part of our experience and our learning and ultimately our coming to the truth and realization of who we are and what we're here to do and what we're here for. But again, it's this emphasis of control and having the autonomy that I, a man, I have the authority to choose as and when I come and go, basically. I'm sorry, I know this is slightly morbid, but the thought crossed my mind about the irony of something going wrong while he's in there doing the practice. I know I shouldn't, but yeah.
Jennifer. There are some people who don't approve of the idea of assisted suicide at all. They would never approve of it. Now, often these people have religious convictions and they say, look, this is a matter only between you and God. Now, those beliefs are interesting and they're okay. I don't mind those beliefs, but they're not my beliefs and they're not the beliefs of many people who decide they want to control their deaths.
But, you can hear okay, see okay. In the video, make sure you say safe.
Yeah, it did, so...
Now press the camera a minute.
People have been using the method of nitrogen for a while in the right to die movement, where people would use things which aren't very attractive, like plastic bags, and they would try to use gas from a compressed cylinder to be able to end their lives. This makes it something which is much more elegant, much more stylish and beautiful.
There we go. Elegant, stylish and beautiful again. I just wanted to touch on this principle that he talks about there with regards to it's all well and good having a religious sentiment attached to this and an ideology, but he may not necessarily agree to these principles or believe in those same principles, which is obviously true. And I think within society, we're always going to find this crossover between biblical truth and adherence to what God's word says and what the law of the land holds to as well. There's this real sticky area, and we see that in play in America, particularly at the moment, with regards to, you know, Christian nationalism and in opposition to you know, liberalism, and this principle of holding people of the world accountable to biblical principles when it comes to laws and statutes. Now, I think a lot of people within the debate either side are going to universally agree that the, you know, things like the Ten Commandments about loving your neighbor, not murdering, and all these things are good things. And again, that's just a whole different conversation in terms of the source of ethics and morality, where this comes from, and by what measure do you hold your morality to, you know, from a liberal perspective. We've also got the difficulty of ascertaining to what point does a government, a kingdom or dominion or state or whatever, how much they adhere to biblical principles within their law. Again, that's a long-standing debate, because, again, you have on one hand, you know, Christian theology based on dominionism, you know, the seven mountains of how Christianity is going to take over the world, and it's going to rule the arts and politics and all of the music, all of the main components within human life should be held by the dominion of Christian principles, which it, on the face of it doesn't sound like a bad thing, but it's not a biblical eschatological truth in terms of how these times work out. With that aside, there are obviously key aspects of why legislation and law are kept to biblical proportions. So he's saying, like, we don't want to be held accountable to what religious people say in terms of how we are to live our lives or, in effect, end them, which... I see the argument, but at the same time, like, we are opening, I say we, as a species, we are in danger of opening the floodgates where man's measurement of morality will then take precedence over God's word. And that is very dangerous territory. So what I mean by that is, when you start advocating for euthanasia in certain cases, where do you draw the line in terms of who's eligible or not? So I think it's super important that, irrespective of what the law is saying, and we see this taking place day to day in society, this debates on hot topics, we need to be there to say, look, what you're doing is wrong. Like, this is wrong, and I need to tell you that you're wrong, at least, otherwise you're just going to lose grip and start playing God, essentially, and start making up your own rules. So with that thought, it's like, what's to stop somebody saying, you know, the qualifications for this process being, you know, have I received a terminal diagnosis, for example? Am I in a state of suffering that's beyond... is it beyond my capability of enduring? Okay, so this is the line at which we can then make that decision, that you have the autonomy to do so. But then somebody says, well, my suffering may not be physical, but it's emotional, and I want out as well. Okay, well, we'll have you. And then it's going to be like, well, I just feel a bit rubbish about life and I don't want to be here anymore. Okay, you can. Then before you know it, you've got like you know, people talk about reduction of the human population. It's like they don't have to do anything. It's like we're just like doing it ourselves. And also we get into the messy area of what I believe to be eugenics. Like you see it in infanticide with children, you know. You know, certain countries will say they reduce the amount of Down syndrome children. Well, that's because you've been killing them before they've been born. Well, that's a great statistic. Thanks very much. What I'm saying is the qualifications for the advocacy of this can be changed. Now, again, there's a principle that somebody needs to be of a sound mind in order to make this decision. But I would advocate those that would, when we talk about the definition of what a sound mind actually constitutes, I would say that people use different margins to describe what that actually means. So I would advocate that there are many people, based on the changing of sound biological principles, I don't know if you'd be of a sound mind if you would describe certain principles as they are. You know, when I'm talking about, you know, gender elements and just basic principles of biology have been like completely warped. I would say I don't know if you're of a sound mind. Like, so I just think this is the beginning of a very, very slippery slope. Okay, let's crack on. Now, this next piece was actually the piece that got me thinking about this subject in general. The sarcopods came afterwards. But I just wanted to go into that, just that, like, this is happening now in real time and this debate is taking place. And again, it's just a case of arming yourself within the conversation. Now, this video I saw is from a lady called Liz Carr. She's an actress by trade, but she's found herself in this right to life debate and area. And I just thought this video was extremely compelling and revealing of a lot of elements in terms of this conversation. So I'll just preface this a bit. Liz has, I believe, an autoimmune situation, which she hadn't always had. It's something that she developed later on in her childhood. And, you know, without mincing my words, she would be a case where someone would say, well, I believe that she might have grounds to want to take her own life due to the situation that she finds herself in. But it's amazing. She takes the opposite stance and has a very real conversation with a lady in Canada who prescribes ways for people to take their own lives. And there's a lot in this that which I find disturbing. But anyway, we'll crack on.
Hello. Thank you for seeing me. You too. Should we do hands and whatever? Are we very formal? Do we not?
We don't need to be formal, but we also don't need to touch hands.
Fine, good. So you do this work actually here sometimes?
Most people want to die in their own homes.
Yeah.
And so I would be in their home. And of course, many people are in hospital, in hospice, in care homes. And then there are people who don't feel comfortable dying at home. For example, they don't want their spouse to have to deal with their memory of them dying in their home. So then they come here, and this is a recliner. And so people recline here, and they can snuggle up with their loved ones if they want. And so it's a good place for some people.
Mm-hmm. According to law, each made applicant must make a written request signed by an independent witness and have two independent medical assessments.
So this is the one that has to be signed in front of an independent witness. And
who would that be if I...
It has to be somebody who is not in the will and not a direct caregiver like me.
Could you or receptionist or...
Yes, because they're not directly involved in care.
How many deaths have you been involved with?
Over 400.
That sounds like a lot. Is that what you do now?
I still run a contraception and abortion clinic in addition to my maid work.
Would you ever...
Contraception and yeah, it's like they go hand in hand.
Say no.
Of course, I have. I mean, we have a law, and I obey this law, and so there are people who are not eligible under the law. Now, there are
Touching on this principle of when the law of the land contradicts what the Bible says, I think we have every right to say. Nah, you know, it's not something that I agree with, and not only do I not agree with it, I'm going to take my position and make that very loud and clear, because without that, aside from the spiritual principalities that are in operation behind these individuals, like, people will just lose their gripping on reality and start, making their own moral compass and... slippery slopes.
Situations where I might find somebody not eligible or eligible when another person won't, because of the way our law is written.
In your experience, what do you think the number one reason that people want made?
The number one reason is autonomy, control.
And what?
Everybody's different in what they think of as autonomy and control.
Yeah. So that would be about not wanting to lose that in their lives.
Yes. Control. They desperately want control. Like, they want to say, it's now. And even we say, okay, well, I can get back here at 7 o'clock. Is that okay? And they'll say yes, and they'll be so grateful that they can skip the last 2 days of their life. And I look at it and think, what you really needed was some more drugs, but you want my drugs, I'll give them to you.
There's something in the human condition that strives for control. And for believers, again, we have such a deep mystery in terms of the workings of a sovereign God and a combination of free will in that. And, you know, as individuals, we can strive to control in ways that are detrimental to ourselves and others. And this striving, I believe, between God's sovereign understanding and divine plan for humanity and man's contention with it, we can often go through this. And, you know, it's illustrated beautifully, even with our Messiah, and, you know, your will be done. And so it's not like we're completely alien to this principle of having to hand over our control or understanding and say, nevertheless, your will be done. A very, very hard principle within the faith to do in so many areas, not just in our own mortality, but just generally speaking. There's a fight between the flesh and the spirit, because it's an enmity with the Most High, and people like this are definitely playing into that element of needing to be in control, particularly within death.
Apart from the fact I don't have the desire, I think probably I would be eligible under the Canadian law.
Well, you'd have to be suffering unbearably, and you'd have to convince me that you were suffering unbearably.
And from what you said, I know you're not...
The giggle, like... I'm trying not to, like... judge the individual, but there's something incredibly eerie about the smiling and the laughing about really harsh things, it's really uncomfortable. But again, we touched on this principle of suffering and the definition of suffering, how it can be relative to an individual. There are those that are physically suffering. There are those that are mentally or emotionally suffering. So who gets to decide the framework at which these massive decisions can be made based on an individual's suffering, because it's relative? So that's what I'm, you know, trying to show in this, is you start with one area and then it's incrementally going to go in a direction where people will be able to take part in this through, reasons that wouldn't warrant it, based on this principle of the measurement of suffering and what would be acceptable to take someone's life for it, you know, particularly those who are in a fragile state of mind.
Do anything here and I'm not as worried. I'm not scared. But I guess what I'm saying is there could be somebody next to me with exactly the same condition.
Yes.
Who doesn't want to go on anymore.
I've certainly met people who are no more disabled than I am, mm-hmm. saying that life is not acceptable in this state. And I would say, you and I are different. But not different in the sense of wanting to have some control. Mm-hmm. So, Liz, right now you love life and you want to live. But there's lots of nasty illnesses you might get.
Yeah.
And if you got terminal cancer and you were having to deal with chemotherapy and radiation, wouldn't you be thrilled that if you had the choice to say, I'll go this far? No further.
For me, I'm concerned that giving the option and the right to a group of people puts another group of people at risk. But I don't feel that you see that as a worry.
What you're saying is to protect what you consider vulnerable people. You are condemning others to unbearable suffering. Unbearable suffering. And I am so glad that I'm a Canadian.
Again, it's so hard when people really seem to have been handed over to such a great deception that they truly believe and feel that they are doing good. It's one thing when you've got some evil mastermind who takes pleasure in doing these things and they're aware of their disposition. But when you're faced with people who vehemently hold on to the fact that what they're doing is right, just, and true, fighting against that is hard. It's tough. Like this woman, she seems to be in a position where like she genuinely believes she's doing good. And you'll also find that on the other end of the spectrum, when it comes to babies, those that have been advocates and have taken part in that, retrospectively will then come to terms with the fact that they genuinely thought they were doing a good thing, which is just, it's just evil.
And that we have this law so that people can choose that or not choose that. But to say that somebody has to suffer like that is simply cruel.
Do you love your job?
And I think the subtext to this, again, when we advocate for life and preserving life, people are then going to say, well, why does your God allow the suffering? Your God is cruel, that he must get a kick out of watching people struggle and do, like, why? You know, all of that stuff comes at you and it's like, right, yeah, these are all really difficult tropes of the human condition. But I don't know the answers to that. I know that there's meaning behind how God uses the worst elements of our experience to our betterment. And I have the faith that he does everything righteously and justly. doesn't mean to say he takes pleasure in this side of human suffering. Again, these people, they lack the context of the state that we're in this fallen state, that we're in arguably some of the worst throes of the human experience and the dominion of evil in our world. Again, without that spiritual context, things do seem very raw. But we understand the nature of the world that we're living in, and at least we have a degree of understanding of what's taking place. So yeah, we're often accused of that. You know, we want to see people suffering. We want people to have these horrible. No, not at all. We're not saying that we can advocate for when and how things are done.
I love my job. You know, I've always loved being a doctor, but and I delivered over 1,000 babies, and I took care of, you know, families. But this is the very best work I've ever done in the last 7 years. And people ask me why, and I think, well, doctors like grateful patients, and nobody is more grateful than my patients now and their families.
Yeah, just a real stark demonstration of what it is that we're facing. And it is hard not to take a personal stance against individuals who advocate for these things, but you know, at least it's good to arm ourselves with what it is we're dealing with. So you know, what is the answer? What is our stance in this area? Because there can be an emotional pull towards where you lean on this, but I think the Bible is really clear about this. So I found a couple of articles which I think lays it out quite well. First story, there are a couple of stories relating to euthanasia in the Bible. One is the death of King Saul. When he was wounded in battle, Saul was injured and asked his armor bearer to kill him, says in 1 Samuel. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and mistreat me." But his armor bearer would not, for he feared greatly. Therefore, Saul took his own sword and fell upon it. Yeah, we've got the situation where Saul's come to the end of his time. He's been seeked out by his enemies, and he's, you know, in great suffering and despair. And he's saying, "Look, I don't want to die at the hands of these people." So his armor bearer is like, "Nah, you know, there's rules to this. You know, to take the life of God's anointed is, you know, it's not the done thing." So Saul takes his own life, and the armor bearer does the same afterwards. So the armor bearer is, you know, he's prepared to do himself, but he's not helping somebody else assist in it. Then we got the death of Abimelech. When a woman threw a millstone on his head, crushing his skull, the Bible relates. Then he called quickly to the young man, his armor bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest they say of me, a woman killed him." And his young man thrust him through and he died. That's in Judges. So in other words, Abimelech's actions and character are not endorsed but criticized overall. In the flow of the narrative, his death by his armor bearer is the contemptible end of an evil character. His request of euthanasia is just the climax of a life of wickedness, and his request for euthanasia is not endorsed. I mean, two like very different situations comparably to the areas that we were looking at in terms of illness and things like that. But the principle's the same. I think the Bible does hint there that this notion of helping someone to die is it's not good. It talks about Jonah. how he despaired of his life. Therefore, now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. And the Lord said, do you do well to be angry? Now, notice how he didn't contemplate committing suicide, but asked the Lord to end his life. The Lord criticized his attitude nevertheless. So there's so many examples in the scriptures where individuals are like, they're in bad situations mentally, to the point where they don't even want to be here. The Lord has other plans. Job cursed the day he was born and described himself as longing for death, yet he did not contemplate taking his own life. The Psalms are full of raw and honest cries to God in the midst of pain, but never approve of taking your own life. Psalm 88 famously closes with, darkness is my closest friend, yet the psalmist there is still crying out to God day and night. Suffering, I thought this is a good point. Suffering is a reality of a fallen world, and we are not promised a suffering-free life. There will be times when we are tempted to self-hatred and to believe the lies about ourselves and about the world, but we're called to reorient our lives and minds towards the truth, and this is generally done with the help of others. So, you know, people who know the scriptures are going to be very realistic when it comes to, you know, the harder aspects of life. That there are times where our faith is tested and we are to cry upon the Lord for help and assistance, and it may or may not come in the ways that we hope for. But yet we're clinging to spiritual principles, kingdom principles, of an eternal life and a life that supersedes our experience here, which is so easier said than done. No one's trying to deny the difficulty of these situations. It's just that without this backdrop, you are going to struggle. You are going to be reaching for solutions that that aren't good. Let's have a look at the second one. What does the Bible say about assisted euthanasia? A related issue is that of assisted unaliving. Essentially, a person seeking assisted is seeking to euthanize himself with the aid of another person to ensure that death is quick and painless. The person assisting the situation facilitates death by making preparations and furnishing the needed equipment. By taking a hands-off approach to the death itself, the facilitator seeks to avoid charges of murder. So again, it comes back to, it doesn't say specifically you shouldn't go in a sarcopod, but technically it's still murder. Proponents of assisted try for a positive spin by using terms like death with dignity, but death with dignity is still death. Assisted unaliving is still unaliving, and that's still wrong. Which are really hard pills to swallow for some people, and I get it, but we have to have this yardstick. We have to have this line in the sand to say, look, this is whatever your emotional pull, whatever your intellectual understanding, like, this is still the line. Let's have a look. Yeah, the overriding truth that God is sovereign drives us to the conclusion that euthanasia is wrong. We know that physical death is inevitable. However, God alone is sovereign over when and how a person's death occurs. No man has power over the wind to contain it, so no one has power over the day of his death. As in Ecclesiastes. There's so much on it. Death is a natural occurrence. Sometimes God allows a person to suffer for a long time before death occurs. Other times a person's suffering is cut short. No one enjoys suffering, but that does not make it right to determine that a person should die. Often God's purposes are made known through suffering. It says in Ecclesiastes again, when times are good, be happy, but when times are bad, consider. God has made one as well as the other. Romans teaches that tribulations bring about perseverance. God cares about those who cry out for death and wish to end their suffering. God gives purpose in life even to the end. Only God knows what is best and his timing, even in the matter of one's death. That timing is perfect. So, yeah, we should never seek to prematurely end a life, but neither must we go to extraordinary means to preserve a life. Now, this is a very good point as well. We've got a lot of... We have a lot of things in our culture when it comes to preserving life in the medicinal realm. So I think the point being there, you know, we're not to go one end of the spectrum to the other, because you can say that there are situations where preserving life isn't optimum. You know, and you can look at different people's interpretations of that biblically, whether it comes to people's stances on transfusions, whether it's organ donorship. Is that a word? Donorship, maybe. There is quite a spectrum of, well, okay, if you're advocating for God's will to be done, then where is the line of interference? You know, I've read things about CPR. CPR is only it's a relatively new practice. You know, are you usurping God's will by practice? You know, like, so I get it. Everything in the Torah is about preserving life. Everything in the Bible is about life and preserving life. So we are, of course, instructed to preserve life as best as we can. So I understand that. And I think that rule applies to the other end of the spectrum when there is great suffering, when there are great situations that we are to strive our very best. And just from a personal point of view, I think this has been a phenomenon that's taken place for a long time. Maybe a lot of the, dare I say, the traditional ways of doing this have always been prevalent, have always been around, and it's a dark and horrible part of what we see in terms of people's suffering. But for me personally, even before being in the faith, that it was never an option. And I thank God for having that preservation, that drive to persevere and endure no matter what. And, you know, I'll be honest, I'm as self-preserving as possible. No way do I want to be tested in these areas, or, you know, God forbid I would find myself in this end of the spectrum. However, I still feel duty bound to say what stance we should take and how we're to combat this. We'll see if we can put a link in the description. There's a petition with regards to the introduction of euthanasia from a local level. I'll leave the link in the description. There's a bill that's currently trying to be passed in terms of the legislation for this being rolled out in the UK. I don't know what it's saying in the United States. Again, it's probably differing from state to state. But again, I don't know what's taking place in your area. Is this something that's affected you? Do you think it's difficult to take a biblical viewpoint on this? Or do we just call it as it is and take the bullets in the meantime? I know where to be guardians of the word. I know where to advocate for what it says, and I'm more than happy to do so. But again, I appreciate this isn't the easiest subject. It's probably not the happiest subject to come back straight into, but I just felt like it was pertinent to get into there. So again, get involved in the comments if there's anything that has touched you, anything that you think is pertinent or that you agree or disagree with. Please feel free to get in contact. Again, thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure, and God willing, we'll see you on the next one. Like, subscribe, do all the stuff. Be much appreciated. And we'll see you on the next one. From our house to yours. Shalom. God bless. We love you. Take care.